Live from the Bloomberg Interactive Brokers Studios, this is Bloomberg Daybreak for Monday, August 3rd, 2020. Coming up this hour,
negotiations on a huge COVID-19 relief bill are set to resume today.
The CEO of Microsoft talks to President Trump as the company tries to salvage its deal to buy TikTok.
Shares of HSBC and Societe Generale slump following their earnings reports.
A tropical storm watch has been issued for the tri-state area as Isa Isis approaches, plus the path for New York schools to reopen in the fall. I'm Michael Barr. More ahead.
I'm John Stanshauer in sports. Aaron Judge hit two more home runs, and the Yankees again beat the Red Sox. The Mets were shut out in Atlanta.
That's all straight ahead on Bloomberg Daybreak on Bloomberg 1130 New York, Bloomberg 99.1 Washington, D.C., Bloomberg 1061 Boston, Bloomberg 960 San Francisco, Sirius XM 119, and around the world on BloombergRadio.com and via the Bloomberg Business app.
Good morning, I'm Karen Moscow.
And I'm John Tucker. Bloomberg Daybreak being brought to you by SEI. Crises and challenges highlight the power of partnership and character. Work for the common good. One community. SEI. Go to seic.com/banks.
And futures are mixed this morning. It is 5:01 on Wall Street, and we check the markets every 15 minutes throughout the trading day on Bloomberg. S&P futures down 2.5 points, Dow futures down 58, NASDAQ futures up 50. The DAX in Germany is up 1.2%, CAC in Paris up 0.33%, and the FTSE 100 is down less than 0.1%. 10-year Treasury down 4/32, yield 0.54%, and the yield on the 2-year 0.10%, and NYMEX crude oil is down 1.2%. COMEX gold up 0.3%. John.
We'll have more on the markets in just a minute, but first, the coronavirus has entered a new phase. That's the new warning from the doctor coordinating the White House response to the pandemic, Deborah Birx.
What we're seeing today is different from March and April. It is extraordinarily widespread. It's into the rural as equal urban areas. And to everybody who lives in a rural area, you are not immune or protected from this virus.
Dr. Birx spoke on CNN's State of the Union. Meantime, talks to keep protecting Americans from the economic fallout are going close to nowhere. Treasury Secretary Steve Mnuchin says Republicans have offered to keep $600 enhanced unemployment benefits going for another week while they negotiate, but staying at that level through the pandemic would be too much.
There's no question in certain cases where we're paying people more to work, stay home than to work, that's created issues in the entire economy.
House Speaker Nancy Pelosi is calling that idea a condescension.
We have been for the $600. They have a $200 proposal, which does not meet the needs of America's working families.
Speaker Pelosi and Secretary Mnuchin were on ABC's This Week, heard right here on Bloomberg Radio.
In deal news, the Japanese owner of 7-Eleven convenience stores has agreed to buy Marathon Speedway gas stations for $21 billion. 7&I is betting that an expanded U.S. footprint will deliver growth in the midst of the pandemic.
And Microsoft CEO Satya Nadella has spoken with President Trump about a move to buy TikTok's operations in the U.S. Bloomberg Daybreak Asia anchor Brian Curtis has more from Hong Kong.
Microsoft is looking to salvage the deal after President Trump said he'd ban the app. A statement said talks will be completed by September 15th. If the deal goes through, Microsoft would own TikTok in the United States, Canada, Australia, and New Zealand. Other American investors could take stakes. Microsoft pledged to add more security and privacy protection. No citizens' data would be stored outside the country. And if a deal does get done, does it set a precedent? In Hong Kong, Brian Curtis, Bloomberg Daybreak.
All right, Brian, thank you. Meanwhile, U.S. Secretary of State Michael Pompeo says the Trump administration will announce measures shortly against a broad array of Chinese-owned software deemed to pose national security risks.
President Trump has said enough, and we're going to fix it. And so he will take action in the coming days with respect to a broad array of national security risks that are presented by software connected to the Chinese Communist Party.
And Pompeo made the comments on Fox.
And in Europe, earnings are out from HSBC and Societe Generale. Let's get the very latest from Bloomberg's Ewan Potts in London. Ewan, good morning.
Good morning, John and Karen. A warning from HSBC today. Europe's biggest bank says that loan losses could reach $13 billion this year as it battles the economic fallout from the pandemic. The London-based lender's speeding up reform of its global businesses after seeing profit drop by more than half. And in France, SocGen swings to a surprise €1.26 billion loss. The bank taking a charge at its trading unit. Structured products hit for a second straight quarter. Equities trading revenue dropped 80%. Live in London, I'm Ewan Potts, Bloomberg Daybreak.
All right, Ewan, thank you. Here in the U.S., it's another busy week for earnings. And Bloomberg's Charlie Pellett reports.
The flood continues this week with big companies in finance, manufacturing, energy, media, and healthcare scheduled to report their latest quarterly results. Tobias Lefkovich is chief U.S. equity strategist at Citigroup Global Markets.
We're looking for earnings for this year in the 125 range and then 150 next year. Consensus for next year is 164. And a survey we did in late June of over 140 institutions suggested that 75% of them believe that 164 is too high.
Among this week's closely watched earnings reports will be Uber, BP, AIG, MetLife, The Walt Disney Company, News Corp, Humana, and Bristol Myers Squibb. Charlie Pellett, Bloomberg Daybreak.
Thanks, Charlie. On the economic front, later this morning, the financial research firm Markit issues its latest assessments of American manufacturing. The prior report covering early July signaled growth for the first time since the coronavirus shut down assembly lines. Today's report will cover all of July, and economists are predicting a sustained, albeit modest, recovery.
The big report of the week will come on Friday when the government issues the monthly jobs report. Economists are forecasting July unemployment will drop closer to 10%. That's the high water mark of last recession. Bloomberg's Vinnie Dalgiudice reports.
Payroll growth last month probably topped 1 million, a hefty gain, but less than May or June. The labor market is deep in the red considering April's record drop of almost 21 million jobs. As of mid-July, 17 million Americans were on unemployment rolls. Also on this week's data calendar, a variety of factory reports, all expected to signal a partial comeback. Vinnie Dalgiudice, Bloomberg Daybreak.
And in Europe, UK manufacturing grew at the fastest pace in almost 3 years in July as the nation's lockdown eased. And ahead of the market open on Wall Street, Dow futures down 65. The NASDAQ futures, they're up 44. You're listening to Bloomberg Daybreak. It is 5:07 on Wall Street. Let's get news from around the world this morning. And we say good morning to Bloomberg's Michael Barr.
Thank you very much, John. Florida's East Coast is getting heavy rain from Tropical Storm Isaias, with state officials dealing with surging cases of the coronavirus. The storm weakened from a hurricane to a tropical storm Saturday, but still hit Florida with heavy rain and flooding. Isaias is forecast to be near hurricane strength by the time it reaches the Carolinas. North Carolina Governor Roy Cooper.
The COVID-19 pandemic remains a threat, and preparations may take longer and look a little different. We can stay safe from the storm and the virus if we're ready.
Governor Andrew Cuomo says New York City area residents should be prepared for heavy winds and rain from the storm tomorrow. Bloomberg meteorologist Rob Carolin has more on the impact of Isaias in the tri-state area.
Michael, the National Weather Service put the area under a flash flood watch from 6 a.m. tomorrow morning through 6 a.m. Wednesday. We're also under a tropical storm watch. Contrary to what the Hurricane Center is saying this morning, this is a very disorganized weather system. We had higher winds and thunderstorms yesterday outside of Albany than we had along the coast of Florida yesterday due to the storm. The big threat is rain. It's going to depend exactly where it tracks because the heaviest rain will fall west of the track. Now, right now, it looks like parts of the tri-state area could see 1 to 3 inches of rain tomorrow into tomorrow night. Good news is the weather improves Wednesday. Michael?
Thank you very much, Rob. New York City unveiled an outline to reopen its public schools in the fall. However, Governor Andrew Cuomo is not happy, saying the plan was submitted late and without specifics. He says parents and teachers remain concerned about safety and quality control.
Just because the school district says we're open does not mean students are going to go.
Last Friday, Mayor Bill de Blasio said New York City must keep its COVID-19 infection rate below 3% in order for schools to reopen and stay open. Federal authorities are sounding the alarm about the potential for a well-timed ransomware attack that could block access to voter registration data and paralyze critical election operations in November. NASA completed a triumphant return to U.S. space travel as SpaceX's Dragon capsule with a two-man crew splashed down into the Gulf of Mexico. Global News, 24 hours a day, on air and on Bloomberg Quick Take. Powered by more than 2,700 journalists and analysts in more than 120 countries. I'm Michael Barr. This is Bloomberg. John.
And Michael, thank you. It's coming up on 5:10 on Wall Street. Time now for the Burden Accountants and Advisors Sports Report. And happy Monday morning, John Stashower.
All right, thanks, John. With the virus spreading through first the Marlins and now the Cardinals, there is talk of scrapping the baseball season that just began. The Yankees certainly do not want that. They are 7-1. They just swept the Red Sox. Dramatic win last night in the Bronx just after the Yanks tied the game in the eighth inning. They went ahead.
Barnes to Judge. Curveball. Fly ball. Deep left field. Way back there. Aaron Judge. Adios, amigo. Oh, is he hot? His second home run of the night. Aaron Judge is guilty of putting the Yankees into the lead with his second home run of the night. A bomb into the night. It is 9-7 New York.
At the final, Ricky Ricardo the call, WFAN Judge, the first Yankee since Alex Rodriguez in 07 to homer in five straight games. Last night he hit a three-run shot in the first inning and that two-run blast in the eighth. The Yanks play the Phillies tonight. It's the Phillies' first game in over a week. Another Met loss in Atlanta. They had 10 hits, no runs, lost 4-0, their fifth straight loss. They've only scored one run in the last two. During yesterday's game, the drama concerned Yoenis Cespedes. He was missing, didn't show up. As it turns out, he's not showing up for any more games. Cespedes opting out of playing, but he didn't bother to tell anyone. In Orlando, Nets beat the Wizards 118-110, a win that'll go a long way towards getting Brooklyn to the playoffs. Caris LeVert, 34 points. Joe Harris had 27. Philadelphia Eagles coach Doug Peterson has tested positive for the virus. Justin Thomas won the golf in Memphis, reclaimed the world number one ranking. John Stashower, Bloomberg Sports. John?
All right, thanks, John. And for New York City's Legion of Runners, the mass starts might be gone, but not the races. That's because virtual racing is booming. The New York City Marathon, which canceled the race because of COVID-19, expects record numbers to sign up for its virtual event. Entrants can run the virtual race anytime from October 17th to November 1st. Anywhere in the world, runners will have to chart their own course and figure out critical logistics. You're listening to Bloomberg Daybreak. The Bloomberg Sports Report brought to you by Burden Accountants and Advisors. Uncertain about your financial future? Let Burden serve as your trusted advisor and create innovative solutions to help protect you, your family, and your business. Visit burdenllp.com.
Markets, headlines, and breaking news 24 hours a day at Bloomberg.com, the Bloomberg Business app, and at Bloomberg Quick Take. This is a Bloomberg Business Flash.
And I'm Karen Moscow, and European stocks turned higher as positive economic data countered pessimism over a resurgence of COVID-19 cases. Meanwhile, U.S. stock index futures are mixed. We check the markets every 15 minutes throughout the trading day on Bloomberg. S&P futures down 5 points, Dow futures down 69, NASDAQ futures up 39. The DAX in Germany is up 1.1%. 10-year Treasury down 4/32, yield 0.54%, the yield on the 2-year 0.10%. NYMEX crude oil is down 1.4% or 58 cents at $39.69 a barrel. COMEX gold is up 0.25% or $5.10 at $19.91 an ounce. The euro 1.1764 against the dollar, British pound 1.3086 and the yen 105.69. We will be listening for several Federal Reserve presidents speaking on the economy today. They include St. Louis Fed President James Bullard, Chicago Fed President Charles Evans, and Richmond Fed President Tom Barkin. And we're also looking for reports on manufacturing at a 10 o'clock Wall Street time, as well as construction spending. And that's a Bloomberg Business Flash. Now here's Michael Barr with more on what's going on around the world. Michael, good morning.
Good morning, Karen. Florida's East Coast is getting heavy rain from Tropical Storm Isaias. The National Hurricane Service said last night that the storm is centered about 50 miles east of Cape Canaveral, Florida, and about 365 miles south of Myrtle Beach, South Carolina. Isaias is forecast to be near hurricane strength by the time it reaches the Carolinas. House Speaker Nancy Pelosi and White House negotiators still remain far apart on a new coronavirus relief plan to restore a $600 per week jobless benefit that expired last week. Talks will resume today. In baseball, the Yankees beat the Red Sox 9-7. The Mets lost to the Braves. The Orioles and A's won. The Giants lost. In the NBA, the Nets beat the Wizards. The Celtics won. Global News, 24 hours a day, on air and on Bloomberg Quick Take, powered by more than 2,700 journalists and analysts in more than 120 countries. I'm Michael Barr. This is Bloomberg, John.
Michael, thank you. It is now 5:19 on Wall Street, and we are live from the Bloomberg Interactive Brokers Studios. This is Bloomberg Daybreak. Let's try to take the pulse of the markets this morning and bring in our first guest, Lori Calvesina, Managing Director, Head of U.S. Equity Strategy at RBC Capital Markets. Lori, I'm trying to find reasons to be optimistic this morning, and it looks like there are fewer and fewer reasons. What is your take?
Sure. So our take is still that we think things are going to turn choppy in the second half. You know, one of the things we do worry about is that 2021 earnings expectations are too high. And I don't think you've really gotten enough color from companies in this reporting season to spark the analyst downgrades that we think need to happen. But that's one thing we worry about. Valuations are still sky high, really telling me that markets are vulnerable to bad news should we get it. I think for now, markets are focused on the hope that we will get a vaccine in the second half. When I talk to investors who are, you know, more bullish than I am, that's what they talk about, as opposed to Fed stimulus, as opposed to the stimulus coming out of Washington. It's really, you know, that prospect of the vaccine and improving virus trends down the road that seem to spark the optimism.
Give me a number for earnings. I think the consensus is somewhere in the mid or 120s or so.
Yeah, and that's true for 2020. You know, the consensus has hovered around 125. It's, you know, we're in a heavy part of earnings season, so it fluctuates day to day. But really for next year, you know, is where most people have been focused. People have been writing off 2021 as irrelevant for quite some time. And the thing that concerns me about next year's numbers is that the bottom-up sell-side consensus expects us to go right back to 2018, 2019 profitability levels, and I just don't think that's realistic.
As far as big tech, it looks like it has, well, it has been doing most of the heavy lifting, at least for the S&P 500. Is that a little troubling to you that it's not broader?
So we're neutral on the tech space, TIMT generally, if you want to throw internet companies into that mix. You know, there are always these questions about market breadth, and when it gets narrow, is that unhealthy? And, you know, the historical studies we've done don't really show anything either way. What I will tell you, I think, on this tech trade, they are expensive, they are crowded, and we keep having these head fakes where the market wants to rotate back into value, but they don't last that long. I think we've had six of these since the pandemic started, and they all end up being short-lived. And the bottom line is that these companies, despite the crowding and overvaluation problems, continue to come through. We think that what lies on the other side of, you know, sort of this initial recovery from the pandemic is sort of stagnant, sluggish economic growth, and that ultimately favors secular growers. So it's not great. I don't love it, but it's hard to sit here and say the market has to go down just for that reason.
Large cap's the place to be then.
Well, so we actually have a neutral on small cap versus large cap. And, you know, what we like about small cap is that they're very cheap. If you look at the positioning.
They're cheap for a reason, I guess, right?
Cheap for a reason, but they historically tend to perform very strongly coming out of recessions. They're more cyclical. So when the market is confident in the cycle and the recovery, they do well. When the market doubts it, they throw their money back into large cap tech. You know, we really think that this is the place to be 3 to 5 years out, but we do think that there's choppy and, you know, perhaps some downside risk in the short term. So it really depends on your time horizon for those companies. But we do think that there's opportunity there for longer-term investors.
Just over, 300 companies in the S&P 500 have reported so far. Most actually have delivered positive surprises. Does it amount to much for you so far?
Not at all. I mean, we track the beat rates, and they've been very strong when you look at both EPS and revenue, so it doesn't really tell you anything about going forward. What will make or break markets in the second half of the year will be whether or not that return to 2018, 2019 levels of profitability that people have been banking on really comes through. You know, we started to see the economic data turn in May back to less bad than feared, and that's what you've gotten in this reporting season. Investors have expected that for quite some time on the earnings front based on what happened with the economic data. So that's not really something that can power another big leg higher from here.
Okay, let's talk Fed then. As far as being in the driver's seat and powering stocks higher, do you expect them to maybe increase the balance sheet going forward? We've got about 30, 40 seconds left.
You know, for the moment, I actually think the stimulus coming out of Washington matters more than what the Fed's doing. The balance sheet's been holding steady. Looks to me on the weekly data like it peaked back in June. The Fed is not really where the action is at the moment. Definitely continue to be supportive of markets, but I think getting this stimulus package done in Washington, that's what's more important to markets right now.
Lori, thanks. Always a pleasure. Lori Calvasina, Managing Director, Head of U.S. Equity Strategy at RBC Capital Markets this morning. And ahead of the cash open on Wall Street, looking at futures right now, they are mixed. The NASDAQ E-mini futures, 49 points higher. That's up 0.5% this morning. S&P futures, I'm going to call it unchanged right now, down just a point. And the Dow futures, they are 40 points lower. That is down about 0.1%. And you are listening to Bloomberg Daybreak. And the Bloomberg 1130 forecast, a tropical storm watch in effect. Flash flood watch from 6 a.m. Tuesday to 6 a.m. Wednesday. Right now, partly to mostly sunny for today. Highs near 90. This is Bloomberg.
Broadcasting live from the Bloomberg Interactive Brokers Studio in New York. Bloomberg 1130. To Washington, D.C. Bloomberg 991. To Boston. Bloomberg 1061. To San Francisco. Bloomberg 960. To the country. Sirius XM Channel 119. And around the globe. The Bloomberg Business App and BloombergRadio.com. This is Bloomberg Daybreak.
And it's 5:30 on Wall Street. Good morning. I'm John Tucker.
And I'm Karen Moscow, and we're just about 4 hours away from the opening of U.S. trading. Let's get you up to date on the news you need to know at this hour. The White House is warning the coronavirus is entering a new phase with, quote, extraordinarily widespread transmission across urban and rural areas. But when it comes to talks on another round of fiscal relief, it appears to be more of the same. White House Chief of Staff Mark Meadows tells CBS's Face the Nation he's not optimistic on reaching a deal with Democrats.
We still have a long ways to go. I can tell you that we've spent the last 3 days, actually last 4 days, trying to get to some kind of consensus, at least to start negotiating.
As for House Speaker Nancy Pelosi's timetable, she tells ABC's This Week.
The fact is that we'll be close to an agreement when we have an agreement.
This Week in Face the Nation can be heard Sundays on Bloomberg Radio.
Microsoft is trying to salvage a deal to buy the U.S. operations of TikTok. CEO Satya Nadella spoke to President Trump about how to secure the administration's blessing to buy the popular but besieged Chinese music video app. Microsoft shares are up more than 2%.
The Japanese owner of 7-Eleven convenience stores has agreed to buy Marathon Speedway gas stations for $21 billion. 7&I is betting that an expanded U.S. footprint will deliver growth in the midst of the pandemic.
Shares of HSBC are down more than 5%. The lender is warning loan losses may reach $13 billion this year as it battles the economic fallout from the coronavirus pandemic.
Societe Generale has swung to a surprise $1.5 billion loss, I would say, because of charges at the French lender's trading unit. The stock is down 3%.
UK manufacturing grew at the fastest pace in almost 3 years in July as the nation's lockdown eased.
Here in the U.S., this morning, the Institute for Supply Management issues its national manufacturing report for July, and economists are forecasting another increase as factories recover from coronavirus shutdowns. Bloomberg's Vinnie Dalciudice reports.
Readings above 50 signal growth, and that's what's anticipated in today's headline. In June, the ISM Factory Index pointed to recovery, topping 50 for the first time since February and hitting a 14-month high. Orders and production both increased, and 13 of 18 industrial sectors reported growth. Regional Federal Reserve data also signaled improvement last month. Vinnie Dalciudice, Bloomberg Daybreak.
All right, Vinny, thank you. S&P futures are little change this morning. Dow futures down 35, NASDAQ futures up 50. Straight ahead, we have the latest world and national news, and this is Bloomberg.
All right, Karen, thanks. It is now 5:33 on Wall Street, and let's get news from around the world this morning. We say good morning once again to Bloomberg's Michael Barr.
John, thank you very much. Florida's East Coast is getting heavy rain from Tropical Storm Isaias. Isaias weakened from a hurricane to a tropical storm, but still hit Florida with heavy rain and flooding. Isaias is forecast to be near hurricane strength by the time it reaches the Carolinas. Governor Ron DeSantis warned Floridians to take the storm seriously. North Carolina Governor Roy Cooper agrees.
We know how to plan, prepare,
and respond when it's over. Nothing about that has changed. But this time, we're going to have to do it with a mask on.
ECES is about to impact the tri-state area. Bloomberg meteorologist Rob Carolyn has the latest.
Good morning, Michael. The National Weather Service has issued a flash flood watch for the tri-state area from 6 a.m. tomorrow morning through 6 a.m. Wednesday morning. There's also a tropical storm watch in effect, but I do not expect tropical storm winds sustained across the area. This is a very weak and disorganized weather system that's eventually going to head our way. The big threat will be rainfall. About 1 to 3 inches may fall over parts of the tri-state area. Heaviest rain will fall west of the track, so that's probably much of northern New Jersey and also Rockland and Orange counties. And it looks like rainfall will be lighter east of the city out over across Connecticut, Long Island. We should see a big improvement in the weather by Wednesday. Michael?
Rob, thank you, sir. Thousands are evacuated because of California wildfires, and some crews are battling flames in dangerous, difficult terrain. Firefighters in the air and on the ground are trying to protect homes in Riverside County in the south near Palm Springs. Marines have called off their search for 8 people after their landing craft sank off the Southern California coast. Bloomberg's Ed Baxter reports.
All 8 are presumed dead. They were on a training exercise. 8 Marines were rescued, but 1 later died, and 2 are in critical condition still. The 26-ton tank-like craft took on water, quickly sank in hundreds of feet, making it difficult to reach. They ranged in age from 19 to early 30s, and all were wearing combat gear, including body armor and flotation vests. Over the course of the search, dozens of helicopters and ships searched more than 1,000 square nautical miles of sea. In San Francisco, I'm Ed Baxter, Bloomberg Daybreak.
NASA completed a successful return to U.S. space travel as SpaceX's Dragon capsule splashed down into the Gulf of Mexico with 2 astronauts. Global news 24 hours a day on air and on Bloomberg Quick Take, powered by more than 2,700 journalists and analysts in more than 120 countries. I'm Michael Barr. This is Bloomberg. John.
Michael, thank you. 5:36 on Wall Street. Time now for the Burden Accountants and Advisors Sports Report. Good morning, John Stashower.
Good morning, John. Would have been interesting to see how many home runs Aaron Judge would have hit if this was a 162-game season. He's got 6 in his last 5 games. The Major League record for consecutive games with a home run is 8. Dale Long, Don Mattingly, Ken Griffey Jr. Last night at the stadium, Judge with a 3-run homer in the second inning and a game-winning 2-run blast to snap a tie in the 8th. The Yanks finished a sweep of the Red Sox 9-7. The Mets slugger, Pete Alonso, meanwhile, is batting just 175. Yesterday in Atlanta, he went 0-for-5 with 3 strikeouts. The Mets shut out by the Braves 4-0. The Mets' 5th loss in a row. More interesting than yesterday's game was the Yoenis Cespedes mystery. He was missing, didn't show up for the game. They opened his hotel room, found all his belongings were gone. Late in the game, Mets finally got a call from Cespedes' agent. He's decided to opt out of playing the rest of the season, the Mets general manager, Brody Van Wagenen.
It was surprising without question, and it's at the same point, we have to go forward, and we have to, you know, not allow, you know, anything to keep us from going forward and attempting to win every game and not have distractions from it.
Clearly the end of Cespedes' Mets career, and this last contract made a lot of money, didn't play much, he'll be a free agent. NBA in Brooklyn, Nets trailed going to the fourth quarter but beat the Wizards 118-110, their first win since March. They got 34 points from Caris LeVert, 27 from Joe Harris. NHL in Toronto, big game for the Rangers today. Noon faceoff against Carolina, who won the opener to the best of 5 series on Saturday. John Stashower, Bloomberg Sports. John?
All right, John, thanks a lot. It is now 5:38 on Wall Street. Time now for the Tri-State Business Report. And for that, we're joined by Bloomberg's Ed Curry.
Dishman Spire Property is a large investor in China's commercial real estate, is looking at adding data centers. They've been one of the most resilient property sectors during the pandemic. The New York-based firm may start its first local currency data center fund later this year. Well, 3 Madison Avenue buildings are for sale. Brokers tell Dow Jones this is the first time this much retail has been for sale on Manhattan's famed shopping corridor in years. One of the building's retail spaces vacant, another is occupied by a luxury clothing retailer, and the third by Anne Fontaine, a woman's clothing line. Well, the Northeast Grand Prix Auto Race at Lime Rock Park in the Lakeville section of Salisbury, Connecticut, has been moved to Charlotte Motor Speedway in North Carolina because of the coronavirus. The race was originally set for its traditional July date, was postponed, though, back in September. That's your Bloomberg Tri-State Business Report. I'm Ed Corey.
Thanks, Ed. 5:39 on Wall Street. Bloomberg Radio is on the air from San Francisco to New York, London to Hong Kong. Let's check in with our global news team now for some of the top stories heard on our 300 affiliate stations around the world.
I'm Jeff Bellinger, and on Cogo in San Diego, I'm reporting a patent lawsuit could prevent Apple from selling some of its products in China.
I'm Courtney Donahoe on KTRH in Houston. The oil crisis is giving BP the chance to make changes.
I'm Caroline Hepke in London, where we're reporting on the government's purchase of two new easy-to-use COVID-19 tests that promise results in just 90 minutes. But will they work when other track-and-trace efforts have floundered?
I'm Steve Potusk, and on 1010 Winds in New York, we're talking about the bankruptcy filing by Lord & Taylor.
I'm Ed Curry on WWJ in Detroit. I'm reporting General Motors is working with EVgo to build a nationwide fast charging network in the country.
And those are some of the stories our 2,700 Bloomberg journalists and analysts are working on this morning around the world. Auto sales are expected to have recovered further in July from the lockdown lulls recorded this spring. Let's get more from Bloomberg's Larry Kofsky.
Most major automakers don't officially report monthly sales figures anymore, but other industry sources continue to offer up their best estimates. TrueCar's ALG subsidiary is forecasting new vehicle sales of just under 1.2 million in July. And while that's still down 18% from a year ago, it is a marked improvement from the 48% drop recorded in April. Ward's Automotive is also expected to report an improvement, with vehicles rolling off the lot at an annual rate of 14 million, up from just over 13 million in June. Larry Kofsky, Bloomberg Daybreak.
And as we just told you, the oldest U.S. department store chain seeking bankruptcy protection, Lord & Taylor, filing for Chapter 11 after a turnaround effort failed. The company has 38 stores. The fashion startup Letote bought Lord & Taylor last year from Saks Fifth Avenue owner Hudson's Bay. And you're listening to Bloomberg Daybreak. The Sports Report was brought to you by Burden Accountants and Advisors. Uncertain about your financial future? Let Burden serve as your trusted advisor and create innovative solutions to help protect you, your family, and your business. Visit BurdenLLP.com.
Markets, headlines, and breaking news 24 hours a day at Bloomberg.com, the Bloomberg Business app, and at Bloomberg Quick Take. This is a Bloomberg Business Flash.
And I'm Karen Moscow. S&P futures, it'll change this morning up a point. Dow futures down 25, NASDAQ futures up 55, and the 10-year Treasury down 4/32, yield 0.54%. That's a Bloomberg Business Flash. Now here's Michael Barr with more on what's going on around the world. Michael.
Karen, a member of the Coronavirus Task Force announced that the U.S. is in a new stage, saying the virus is far more widespread in both rural and urban areas than it initially was in the early stages of the pandemic. Tropical storm Isaias is forecast to be near hurricane strength by the time it reaches the Carolinas. Global news 24 hours a day, on air and on Bloomberg Quick Take, powered by more than 2,700 journalists and analysts in more than 120 countries. I'm Michael Barr. This is Bloomberg, John.
And it's 5:47 on Wall Street, live from the Bloomberg Interactive Brokers Studios. This is Bloomberg Daybreak. Bloomberg Markets Magazine is out with a special issue focused on diversity, where black men and women share their experience on Wall Street. There's no universal experience, but their stories reflect what it's like and what it means to be just one of a handful of blacks in finance. A Bloomberg radio and television correspondent, Shanali Basik, contributed to the issue and brings us more in this special report.
It's hard to define the black experience on Wall Street, partially because there are so few people of color in the C-suite and on trading floors across the industry. At the beginning of this year, there were more than 80 top executives at the six biggest U.S. banks, and only one was black. We interviewed people across the industry. Carla Harris, who has since become one of the most senior women at Morgan Stanley, was one of the few people of color at the firm in the 80s.
Excellence looked like six white men at the top, right? That wasn't strange at all. That's what you saw at IBM. That's what you saw at GM. That's what you saw at Morgan Stanley, Goldman Sachs. You pick it, right? So you knew that if you wanted to play on this playing field, that was what you were going to have to be comfortable in some cases being the only and being the first. So that was not intimidating to me at all. That's just the way it was. You know, I would say I had three strikes against me. Here's what I said to myself as a first year and second year associate. I said, you got three strikes against you. You're young, you're a woman, and you're black.
Reggie Brown was also alone when he became the first African-American exchange official in the 90s.
I've always saw race as an attribute because I realized that a lot of times I was the only one in the room, or I stood out because I was 6'5", a black dude, and everyone remarked on that because it was such a unique thing to be in the environment that I was in. And so I think through ambition and talent and drive, I created my own opportunities.
Many of the people we interviewed said they felt systematically shut out of Wall Street's tight-knit circle. Sometimes that sentiment was even overt.
There was some recognition, I think, of my talents, but also, you know, just where I stood in the hierarchy. You know, I remember when I first became a member of the stock exchange, I sat in the members' lounge, and a 90-year-old member of the exchange didn't believe I belonged there and cleared his throat and told me to go.
That was in the 90s. More than a decade later, Lauren Simmons was only the second black woman to become a trader at the New York Stock Exchange. That's in the 225-year history of the trading floor. Before she passed her Series 19 exam, the men around her bet that she wouldn't even make it through the test.
One of the New York Stock Exchange archivists came up to me and said, "You realize that you were the second African-American woman in history, and this was in 225 years." And I'm thinking to myself, like, wow, this is a historic moment, but it is very bittersweet that there, you know, weren't more women that came before me.
There's been some change over time, but it's come in fits and starts. For Carla, that shift started in the 90s, but she saw many people of color laid off in hard times for the industry.
We have made some progress because it used to be, Sonali, that I could name every person on Wall Street, let alone every senior person on Wall Street. And I am happy to say that I cannot do that today. So by definition, we've made some progress. The reason why I think we aren't farther along in financial services broadly, and certainly Wall Street particularly, is that I feel that diversity has been a bull market phenomenon. When things are going really well, then people are focused on it. And then when you have a bear market environment, you have restructurings, you have reductions in force, and obviously small populations are disproportionately hit. And then when we get back into an upturn, that's when you look around and you go, oh my gosh, where's my pipeline? And you got to start all over again.
And with the death of George Floyd and protests spanning more than 2 months, many in Wall Street's black community have been compelled to create change. They're speaking openly about race for the first times in their careers.
You know, seeing George Floyd being murdered by a white cop with his hands in his pocket, you know, it's just morally reprehensible. You know, and I think because we're all at home working at home from COVID, everyone had an opportunity to kind of focus on it. And I think what's different is I think there's more people of color in their agency to speak freely about these issues.
Age plays a part, too. Lauren sees a younger generation hesitant to accept the status quo. She thinks the next wave of talent is unlikely to stay on Wall Street if things don't change.
The shift is going to happen with the younger generation is that they're just going to get fed up with traditional Wall Street or traditional maybe tech spaces or so on and so forth. And they're just going to create their own companies that include everyone, because I do really believe that the younger generation really gets it.
But the road ahead is still a hard one, with barriers to entry.
You know, Wall Street, you know, is a closed society, and, you know, it's a meritocracy, and it's very hard to get in and stay in. And once you're in, you know, the environment sometimes is rough and tumble. It's not very friendly. But is that true for everything else in life?
After almost 24 interviews with people of color on Wall Street, we found that being black often means being alone, held back, and deprived of the best opportunities. Some made it to the top, some left disenchanted, some became rich, some were so underpaid they had to sue. Some think Wall Street is hopeless, but some are more optimistic than ever. In New York, I'm Shanali Basak, Bloomberg Radio.
And our thanks to Bloomberg correspondent Shanali Basik. Also, thank you to Bloomberg reporters Max Abelson and Kelsey Butler for their contributions to this report.
In legal news now, at 5:54 on Wall Street, many conservatives were disappointed over Justice Neil Gorsuch's opinions in two landmark cases this term, affirming LGBT rights and Native Americans' rights in Oklahoma. Some are comparing Gorsuch to his mentor, Justice Byron White, who was never concerned with public perception or criticism. For more on the similarities between Gorsuch and White, Bloomberg's June Grasso speaks to Bloomberg Law Supreme Court reporter Kimberly Strawbridge Robinson.
Gorsuch is a textualist, but White wasn't. How are their approaches to law similar, if they are?
Well, they're not really. Their approaches to the law are really worlds away. But what stands out is some of the ways that they view the justice's job. And so both White and Justice Gorsuch are big proponents of separation of powers and believers in, you know, elected officials, and that courts should generally stay, as Justice Gorsuch has put it, in their lanes and leave a lot of the disputes that courts are asked to weigh in on to the political branches. So that's one way in which they're alike. And another way, which has become pretty important for this term, was that neither really cared about their public image. Justice Gorsuch famously wrote in his recent book that Justice White didn't, quote, give a fig about what other people thought. And, you know, we see that really playing out in Justice Gorsuch's opinions about LGBTQ workers and also the tribal jurisdiction case that you mentioned. Those really have some very big implications. And Justice Gorsuch didn't seem to care.
Did he respond at all to any of the criticisms in any way?
No. So I was talking with some of his clerks, and many of them said he just doesn't care. You know, he's going to move on with his life. He's going to write the opinion, put a lot into it. But then after that, he's not going to read what commenters are saying. That's just not how he chooses to spend his time. Instead, he'd rather spend time with his family and worrying about being outdoors, not worrying about what the public is saying about him.
He wrote after Justice White's death, and he said his tenure on the bench was characterized by an utter indifference to partisan agendas. So you think that Gorsuch as well has an indifference to partisan agendas?
Well, that certainly seems to be the case. We see Justice Gorsuch, this isn't the only time since he's been on the court where he's crossed over and joined his more liberal colleagues in closely divided cases. And although a lot of his rulings will tend to lean conservative based on how he approaches the law, you know, I get the sense from talking to his clerks and people who know him well that he's not motivated by getting to conservative outcomes, but that's just kind of naturally where his jurisprudence will often lead him.
And that's Bloomberg Law Supreme Court reporter Kimberly Strawbridge Robinson speaking to Bloomberg's June Grasso. Catch more of that interview plus analysis of the latest legal news by listening to the Bloomberg Law Show at 10 p.m. Eastern Time or subscribing to the Bloomberg Law Podcast. And attorneys can find exceptional legal research and business development tools at BloombergLaw.com. Futures this morning, they're little change. With S&P futures, they're up about 3 points now. Dow futures down at 6. But NASDAQ futures, they are definitely higher, up 54. The 10-year Treasury down 5/32, yield 0.54%, and the yield on the 2-year 0.10%. NYMEX crude oil is down 1%. And Bloomberg Daybreak continues. This is Bloomberg.